Hey, and welcome to episode 6 of Married with Clickers. I am Scott, here with my lovely wife, Kat. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great.
Before we get started and talk about some movies and TV, I just wanted to make an announcement that our podcast will be moving over to Libsyn.
This is very fickle.
Very fickle. Sorry, Podomatic.
Yeah.
You were free. You were good while you were free.
That's right.
But we got to start paying now, so we're heading over to Libsyn. I don't exactly know how it works yet. We have signed up. Some of the stuff is transported over there, but I think what I'm going to do is put this podcast on both Podomatic and Libsyn.
Brilliant.
So people can hear this announcement. And after a while, I'll actually just put a little announcement podcast up to finalize the change. How it works over at iTunes, I'm really not sure. That's what's boggling my mind the most right now. So when the time comes, maybe you can figure out how to switch the RSS feeds on your end, gentle listener. But keep ready listening for updates, I guess. So let's talk about what we've been watching lately. Oh, sorry. I do want to say two thank yous. A couple of guys have been great helps to me getting in with Libsyn. That's Miles at Shosho and John at V Cinema. Thank you very much for your help.
Thank you. Because I have no clue what Scott just said.
That was just gobble, gobble, goop, goop.
RSS and whatever.
I'm making...
Technology happens somehow.
Yeah. I was making it sound like I knew what's going on. I really don't.
No.
This guy at Libsyn's about to kill me because, like, you know, I gave him $15, but I've been taking him about 3 hours of his time by email today.
Oh, really? Oh, no.
So, like, they're not, you know, getting a lot for the money with us just yet.
No.
Let's talk about The Office.
Yeah.
I would say when The Office was first launched, I mean, this was our go-to Thursday show.
Definitely.
Like, you could not wait for the next...
Yeah.
It was just there. Now it seems to sit on our PVR a little while longer.
Yeah, I'm not as into it.
And I think that happens with shows. Like, you still enjoy them, but you don't need it as much as you once did.
Right.
Because it's always there. You take it for granted, maybe.
Right. So what's our show like that now? I guess Modern Family, maybe, or Community?
Yeah, those two would be one and two, neck and neck, I would say.
Yeah.
Like, if I had 2 hours to watch TV and a lot of half-hour sitcoms, those would be the first two for sure.
Yeah,
and The Office is down there more in the Parks and Rec, 30 Rock area.
Yeah.
So The Office is going to have a big change at the end of this year.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been seeing some interesting things happen so far this year. The episode we just watched had Ricky Gervais show up.
Yeah. That was the best 2 minutes ever.
Did you know it was sort of going to be all downhill after that?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, he's just... amazing.
I guess this problem.
Don't you wish you were that funny?
I wish he was like my...
Sorry. No slight intended, Scott.
I wish he was my best friend.
Yeah, I know.
We were once sitting on a beach on a vacation listening to his podcast a couple years ago with his buddy Steven.
Yeah.
And then we were just dying.
Yeah.
We must have looked like fools lying there on the beach.
Yeah.
So, good stuff. Now, Holly's back. We all were pining for Holly's return. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I was really anticipating that, but no, I don't know. I found them annoying, actually. You know, their quirks, the way they interact, used to be kind of amusing. Now it was just irritating.
Yes, looking
forced.
Like very forced.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's been a big mistake. But, you know, Steve Carell's leaving the show at the end of this year.
Yes.
How long do you think it'll survive post-Carell?
I'd give it a year.
Yeah. There's a lot of talk about who's going to replace him and all this stuff, but the question is, you know, do you really care?
And at some point, too, I'm sure some of the other actors are ready to move on, too,
mm-hmm.
right?
For sure. A lot of them are getting movie work and whatnot. So, yeah, a year, maybe two at most. It gets a bit sad at that stage.
It does.
It's like, you know, Charlie's Angels when none of the original Angels are left
right.
anymore. So, reality TV, awkward. We got to talk about it again, and people are too cool, don't like to hear us talk about this.
But
American Idol's back.
It's back.
I wouldn't say we're American Idol addicts. We've missed many, many seasons,
we have.
Right?
Yeah.
But we were interested to see what it would be like sans Simon.
Yeah.
And all those other people, I guess, but it really didn't matter who else
left. No, it's all about Simon being gone. I miss him.
Now, traditionally, you're a big Aerosmith fan.
Traditionally. My past life.
Well, you weren't like rocking out to them today.
No.
But, so Steve Tyler's there.
Yeah.
You're a huge J-Lo fan, no less.
Yeah, of course.
Angel Eyes is one of your favorite movies of all time. So how
no,
do
you... No, but it's the one with
out
Mooney,
of sight.
Though. Out of Sight.
Out of Sight.
That's a very good movie.
Yeah.
Angel Eyes, come on.
But traditionally, you're a J-Lo apologist.
Yeah, sure.
So how do you think they're doing?
I don't think she's as much of a diva as she's... You know, people say that she's a huge diva, and I do not see that. you know, she seemed to be quite sensitive and emotional at times, as did Steven Tyler.
I agree. I thought they both just seemed really dumb. And they both show more intelligence.
Oh, I thought you meant on the show they seemed
really
dumb.
I would have thought. I was like, yeah. Oh my gosh, because, you know, J-Lo, she would think she's got no sense of humor. She takes herself way too seriously and all that.
Right, but we've seen her do comedy and she can do it.
She can do it. And they're doing much better than I ever would have thought.
Yeah.
Can I last the whole season without Simon? I don't know.
No, I don't know either. Because Randy's dull.
Any talent you see there? Anyone you think's going to make it so far? We haven't seen all the episodes, but anyone that stands out?
I'm not a good judge of talent. But I mean, I like some of the stories.
Well, neither are the judges on American Idol, necessarily.
The guy with the fiance who had the accident. I mean, that's a tearjerker and an interesting story. You know, I think everyone was weeping seeing that. So, you know, it's be something to follow, I guess.
Yeah, they try to build these stories up, and they're lovely, because you need that connection, you know. And unfortunately, some of these people don't get that far, so you really kind of fall in love with them early on, but they don't necessarily last.
That's true.
Yeah, talent-wise, no one's really done much for me so far.
No. No, that's true.
Now, we saw Brandon...
Some younger people, though, actually, now that I think about it.
Oh, yeah, because they have
a lot of 15-year-olds that were pretty talented, when I think about what I was doing at 15.
I'm thinking the child labor laws might have been adjusted in the U.S. so that now 15-year-olds can do it, get pulled out of school to go... I don't know. It seems... It does seem a bit weird. So we saw a brand new movie. Finally got around to watching Christopher Nolan's Memento.
Wow, yeah. From American Idol to Memento.
To Memento. Well, it's funny. We were sitting there one evening deciding to watch a movie, and you said to me, you want something, you know, where you don't have to think too much, that's just, like, fast-moving. And
that's exactly what Memento is.
So we picked Memento.
That's perfect.
Which is just, like, you know, it just rolls along. So we made a choice. This is a movie I've walked past on the movie shelf at the DVD, the rental shop, so many times. And just for one reason or another, never got it.
Mm-hmm.
How did you like old Memento, Christopher Nolan's first major movie?
Wow, he's talented. As is his brother, right? Who it's based on a short story that he wrote.
Yeah, he wrote
it. They obviously might have some dark sort of
tough
issues.
Childhood?
Yeah, psychological trauma that
locked
they're
the
working through
at some
or
point.
Something. But I don't know.
Trapped under the stairs as children?
Yeah. But no, it was fabulous. And it was one of those movies, too, that sat with me for a few days. You know, I'd think, go back to it just in the quiet moments during the day and think about it. And I think that's always the sign of a fabulous movie, right?
Yeah, you know, I was like, I'd like to do a show on it, maybe, but I would get so confused trying to explain it to people.
Yeah.
I could never do an Inception show nor a show on Memento.
No.
I would just get some Memento. I just said Memento.
Yeah,
and this high concept, sort of these high concept movies are really tough to pull off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got this really crazy idea, but you need to be very controlled when you're putting it all together.
Mm-hmm.
And, well,
that was what was so interesting, right? How he used, like, the different narrative and the move from black and white to color.
Right.
To sort of differentiate the narrative.
Then they were moving in different directions. One's moving forward, one's working backwards. And I guess they meet towards the end.
Yeah.
And then the last bit.
Yeah.
There's brilliant stuff. So, if you're the only other person out there that has yet to see Memento... I guess we highly recommend it.
Yeah. Don't you love Guy Pearce, too? He's great. I actually read that Brad Pitt was going to be cast for that. And then he had another obligation, so aren't we grateful?
Yeah, he's wonderful. I don't know what his deal is. I have a feeling he's probably pretty picky in terms of what he does, because I really think he could have been a huge star had he wanted to.
Yeah.
Like, he could have been Batman.
Is that right?
No, I don't know.
Oh, you mean he might have been cast for that already?
You just think
he would do a great job, yeah.
And he's buddies with Nolan, could have done a great job.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah. Guy Pearce, good work. I know there's an Aussie Western out there, I think it's Aussie, called The Proposition, I'd like to see sometime. He's in that one. So, Memento, check it out. Now, tonight we'll be talking about the movie Rushmore, so why don't we take a little break, go put on our red berets, and come back and talk about that wonderful Wes Anderson flick.
Oh,
welcome back to Merrywood Clickers. Tonight we're talking about the 1998 comedy Rushmore, directed by Wes Anderson and written by Owen Wilson and Wes Anderson.
They're a talented pair.
Yeah, just looking at Owen Wilson, I would never think this guy can write either. I don't know.
No.
He's just tabloid fodder.
Yeah. Well, that seems recent though, right?
I guess so, yeah. Ever since he's become a big star.
Mm-hmm.
I like sort of late 90s Owen Wilson a lot more.
And he had some issues, and that often leads to creativity, right?
That's true. That's very true. So, Rushmore is a comedy, and we were discussing off mic about how comedy doesn't always click with everyone and how... You know, the first time we saw this movie, we saw it separately. We didn't know each other at the time. But the people we were with didn't necessarily love it.
No, I was with two female friends. They're good friends of mine. I still like them despite their views of this movie. But they really did not like it and were very obvious about that during we saw it at the theater. And they really expressed their disdain for it throughout the movie and then afterwards. And I really loved it. And that was a little bit hard. But that's how comedy is, right?
Yeah, it's totally hit or miss.
Yeah.
Same thing with me. I saw it with a couple friends, Deirdre and Feldman, and Deirdre and I were laughing our heads off, and Feldman was just like, "What the hell was that?"
Yeah, it's surprising.
I don't know why.
And you wouldn't think that necessarily about him, right?
No, whatever day it is, whatever mood you're in, whatever.
Yeah.
Because I raved about this, recommended to my parents. It was like dead to them. They had no time for this movie.
Yeah.
So, well, I just don't get it. But
too bad for them.
So we showed our hand. We're big Rushmore fans.
Yeah, that's right. Slightly biased.
Yeah. No, you don't have to hang on the edge of your seat to see if we liked it or not. So I swear, at one point we'll do a movie we just despise, I guess. We'll see. But we thought it would be fun to talk about a comedy because they are quite different. And this one, I think, is very, very unique.
It is.
And, you know, we both love it. And we'll be throwing a lot of quotes out there because there are a lot of great lines in this movie.
Although it's hard to quote comedy.
It is.
Yeah,
it is.
So...
Because it never... It
we won't sound as funny as it is in the movie.
Yeah, so listen to us talk, but pretend it's Bill Murray saying
it. That's right.
then laugh.
Yeah, exactly.
So the world of Rushmore we're introduced to in this classroom scene where Max solves the hardest... What was it? The most difficult geometry question in the world.
Yes.
Brilliant Max. But Wes Anderson fakes this out. It's just a daydream.
Yeah. So, and he like wakes up drooling.
He's
right?
Drooling in chapel.
Perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, where Bill Murray's giving this terrific speech.
Yeah. And he's taking notes in perfect calligraphy. Max is taking notes in perfect calligraphy, saying, I guess, the tone of the speech. You know, his notes are rich, kids bad, best chapel speaker ever.
Nice. Yeah. Very nice.
So speaking, very concise notes.
Very concise.
Wonderful calligraphy.
It's all true. So before we get to Bill Murray, speaking of calligraphy, Max, I think, is the founder and potentially only member of the calligraphy club. And you were asking me earlier about...
what club you join of Max's?
Yeah.
There are a lot of options.
A lot of options. I think the... one of the plays. I think I'd really like to be in one of those plays.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean... This were pretty spectacular. But what about the Bombardment Society?
The Bombardment Society is very very good, very sophisticated. I might be a bit big for it.
Yeah.
Those are some pretty little kids.
Yeah, they were.
I don't know.
Or just the beekeepers, too.
Beekeepers are awesome.
Yeah.
And they can come in handy knowing your way around bees, as we learn later.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Bill Murray gives this speech. And I think the last thing he says in the speech is, you can't buy a backbone. When he says, like, take aim at the rich kids, they can't buy a backbone.
Right.
And right after chapel, Max approaches him. It was like, you know, they have their first meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, that, you know, they really get along. And because I think Murray sees that Max has got a lot of backbone.
Sure.
You know.
And there's that mutual admiration that starts right there.
Yeah. And then we move into, we find out so much about Max, because we do find about all the clubs through this, I thought his resume or extracurricular activity montage.
Yeah, that's
where we
right.
see the beekeeping. The Bombardment Society. He's trying to fly airplanes. I can't remember the little
set
race.
To great music, right? I can't remember what
that
it was
one
during
might
that.
Be,
but
what is that one? I can't remember. But that's a good point because there are a lot of montages in this movie.
That's right. Yeah.
Like I can't think of a movie with more musical montages, and that can be tricky territory. But I think it usually works here because there are a lot of quick little laughs. You know?
Yeah, and it didn't seem repetitive.
No.
No, that's good.
So we move into September, and the curtain, a red curtain opens, and it says September or something. So this is how Anderson's chosen to denote time with these, like, very blatant, hey, it's September. Does that take you out of the movie at all? It works for you in this? What do you think?
Yeah, I think because of Max's theatrical nature, I think it really, you know, showed his love of theater. And so I thought that was okay. It didn't distract me.
No. And I guess this is a movie, too. Maybe you're never really in it. It's almost, you almost are aware it's a movie the whole time. So the fact that they're being blunt and saying there's a lot of, you know, titles and cards like that. So and it kind
awkward
of
awkward moments.
And awkward moments, for sure. That's something I want to talk to you a bit about later. So, Max takes out a Jacques Cousteau book from the library, sees this very interesting quote someone's written in there, and seeks out the person who wrote that, and it's another teacher at the school, Ms. Cross, who teaches first or second grade or something. And she's played by the lovely Olivia Williams, who we know from Dollhouse.
and
The Sixth Sense.
And The Sixth Sense. Yeah,
I don't think she gets much work, but she's quite good. Like, her role in Dollhouse was pretty stupid.
Yeah, I mean, that whole show was questionable, but anyway.
Sorry, Joss Whedon, we tried.
Yeah.
There's no Firefly,
no,
dude.
No, it's no Firefly.
So, and when he opens the door, he's interested in her. He peers in, and you probably noticed this. I never noticed it the first few times I saw it. You hear the sounds of the ocean.
Yeah. It's good effect,
gulls
right?
Gulls chirping. Why have I never noticed that before?
No, yeah.
But this time I noticed the Cousteau book. We were talking about the Steve Zissou connection. And then right then I noticed the sounds of the sea.
Yeah, Wes Anderson has a thing for underwater.
For sure. So we move on to Max's... he goes to a barbershop. And this is another fake-out Anderson sort of does. Max sits down to get his hair cut. And then he, like, observes it. Like, you're not a man. You don't get your hair cut like a man does. But maybe it's the same in the ladies' salon. I don't know. But after they're done, they've cut your hair. And they take a mirror all around your head.
Sure,
so you can check out. And you always say it looks good. I've never said it doesn't look good. Whatever. No. I mean,
you just want to get the hell out of
there. You just want out of that. I do. I don't like getting my hair cut. It's like a trip to the dentist for me.
Yeah.
So he's treating the barber like he's a real barber. Then we find out this is his dad.
Which is, again, just classic Max, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But his dad is such a likable character, isn't he?
He is. Because he's almost like the grandfather figure. You know, there's a pretty big age gap. There's played by Seymour Cassell. I don't know if it's Cassell or Castle.
Yeah, I don't know either.
So, let's say Cassell. Great. Just wonderful, eh? As his dad.
And he sort of indulges Max's eccentricities.
Yeah, he doesn't mind him.
He doesn't mind them. Yeah. He accepts him.
He accepts him and will pretty much encourage him to do anything.
Yeah.
And then Max makes really his first move on Miss Cross as he approaches her at the bleachers, I guess, wearing his red beret.
Right.
Is that the way to do it? Put on your beret?
I think so. Well, she did compliment him on it.
She did. While smoking.
While smoking. Yeah, that was a bit... She was inappropriate. She was smoking in front of her student, which I thought would have been a no-no. And I think she was maybe a bit flirty there.
I think she was a bit flirty, too. She was sending Max some sort of signal.
Yes.
And a 15-year-old boy is very impressionable. Now, smoking in this movie, it's one thing I never really noticed that I started looking at this through an eye. There's a lot of smoking
in this
movie.
There's a lot of smoking.
And everyone seems to smoke when they're unhappy.
Yeah, right.
And Bill Murray's unhappy pretty much the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, they've got a family portrait.
With him
smoking.
He's
got a cigarette hanging out of his lips like Robert Mitchum or something, you know?
Yeah, it's good.
And Max even starts to smoke towards the end. When he's less Maxy, I guess, he gets a bit sad and he starts to smoke. So it's very interesting.
Yeah.
So he's had his first attempt to chat up Ms. Cross, and we meet some of the other students at the school. We really learn that Max is out there. Like he's talking to her about that they're going to stop the Latin program. She says that's sad. So he really works at bringing Latin back to the school.
Which the irony was, prior to that, he had tried to get rid of Latin.
He'd been trying to get rid of Latin for years.
Yes.
So now, through his efforts and his petitions, Latin's now mandatory for grades 7 through 12.
But you can imagine how popular that made him.
Yeah. Very, very popular. And the best line here is when that Scottish guy goes, you dirty wee skidmark. And Max goes, was that Latin?
Yeah.
Again, picture someone else doing it. It's hilarious.
It is hilarious.
So we learn that Herman Bloom really hates his twin boys, his twin redheaded boys.
Which I actually read, Bill Murray really did not like those actors that played those.
Oh, really?
So a lot of, because I think, you know, Bill Murray's known for being able to just sort of like ad lib or whatever. And some of those scenes where he was particularly brutal with his sons were just him improvising.
Like
a bit.
Swatting at
yeah.
them?
Yeah. Oh, because he had disdain for them, which is understandable.
Yeah.
They did not seem likable.
I couldn't stand them either. Oh, man. If our guy turns out like that. But there's a scene where they're throwing a birthday party for the twins.
Yeah.
And he's so depressed.
Oh, yeah.
In his Budweiser swim trunks.
Yeah.
And
with a cigarette hanging out.
With a cigarette hanging out.
Got hanging out. Everything's hanging out, yeah.
And he just jumps into the pool, oblivious to the rest of the world. And there's that moment in this movie. And I think, like, I love being underwater. There's just a sense of, like, serenity, mm-hmm. you know, when it's so quiet and you just escape. And that's what they're trying to do here, I guess. And I just love that little moment. And I kind of wish they held on it a bit longer to really get that that message across, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Then Max really starts to show his hand to Miss Cross, and his affections are becoming more obvious. And he decides the thing to do to win her over is to help build an aquarium for her.
Right.
A full-size aquarium on the school campus.
Yeah, and bring Bloom in.
Bring Bloom in.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also where we meet that the third Wilson.
Right, yeah.
He's basically like the Stephen Baldwin of the Wilson family. Who played the football coach here, gets mad at Max for trying to take
over. They all have the same voice. Do they not all have the same voices?
Yeah.
How does that happen?
I don't know. If they did like a Wilson Brothers animated show, you wouldn't be able to tell who's
no,
who, for
it's
sure.
True.
But it's really funny that these guys are such pals, they all find work for each other. You
sure,
know?
Why not?
This is obviously the lesser Wilson, I guess.
Yeah.
And Miss Cross ultimately tells Max, she's figured out what's going on because he's hanging around her all the time, and she does that whole, like, you're too young for me thing.
Yeah.
And Max is a bit heartbroken, but I don't think he's given up hope just yet.
No.
We get his big production of Serpico. How great would it be to see Serpico on stage?
Imagine.
You know,
it's meant to be done in live theater,
I think so.
Sure.
So it's a big success. And afterwards, and this is the first of a couple times I've noticed it, when he's coming out to the applause, it goes into like super slow motion.
Yeah.
And Anderson uses that a couple
times. That technique
a
lot.
It's very interesting.
Yeah.
Then they go out to dinner, which might be the scene of the whole movie. And I know the reason I went to see this movie is I either saw a commercial with the scene in it, or it was like maybe Bill Murray was on Conan and talking about it, and that's the clip. Something about it, but I knew this scene before I saw the movie.
Did you? Yeah. With Luke Wilson.
Mm-hmm. And it was just as funny the first time I saw it, and it's still just as funny today.
Yeah.
Like, nice nurse's uniform, bud. It was my OR scrubs. OR they?
It's just so good.
Again.
Yeah.
Much funny. And it's not the line that's funny. It's Bill Murray's laughing, trying not to laugh.
Yeah, trying to stifle that laugh,
trying
right?
to not spit up his scotch, whatever.
Right.
Oh, man.
And then we find out, too, that Bloom, or Murray's character, has ordered Max a whiskey and water. So it's just, it's again, like, Murray is so inappropriate, like Max. They share that inappropriate behavior.
And Max blurts out he's in love with Miss Cross at this stage.
Yes. Again, inappropriate.
Inappropriate. And this is when everything starts to go downhill. We move into, because I guess they start to spend some time together. My timing might be a bit off.
I think after that, Max gets expelled for the aquarium fiasco, right?
So I might have my timing off.
I think you're right. The play, and then they have their meal, and then he gets expelled for the aquarium.
And we're into October now.
And he says, I'm going to miss the seasons when he has to leave the school.
To go to public school.
Yeah.
The mono season public school.
Yeah.
So we're into October now at the public school.
Yeah.
And we get another music montage of the three of them spending more time together.
Mm-hmm.
But so it's a weird love triangle, but ultimately Herman starts to spend time just with Ms. Cross.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, because good old Dirk Calloway sees them walking together and reports back to Max.
Right.
Max is pissed.
Yeah.
And we get into the part
Dirk,
of the...
We haven't even talked about Dirk. He's a fabulous character, too.
His chapel partner, Dirk Calloway.
Yeah. I don't know if you've met him.
Sort of a wonderful right-hand man, I guess, to have other good wingman.
Yeah.
So we get into the part of the movie I'm going to call The War, mm-hmm. where both of them are fighting over Ms. Cross. And it's another wonderful music montage, a section I'm going to call The Three Bs. And that's for bees, bikes, and brakes.
Yeah, that's good.
Because the war kind of escalates from the bees in the hotel room to the busted up bike to him cutting the lines on his brakes.
Yeah.
So now Max has been he's been expelled from school, but now he's been arrested by the cops. That's how rough his life is getting now.
Didn't you love the description that Bill Murray gave to the cops? He's like, you know, whatever, dark hair, you know, whatever, 5 feet, 112 pounds. You know, it's already, not too menacing sounding.
No. So Max is in big shit now. So we move into November. And Max is now not even at the public school. He's working in his dad's barbershop. And everyone's much more sad. We get another music montage, and this one's with that Rolling Stones song.
Yeah.
And it's of the three of them leading their separate lives, really, you know. And I noticed at one part they're all eating.
Yeah.
You know, alone. Like, he's eating. Bill Murray's looking out his office window eating. She's sitting alone at a table. It's very, very interesting. Very well done. There's one bit where we realize it's December now, and the headmaster, Dr. Guggenheim, has had a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
Max goes to visit him in the hospital. Bill Murray's totally spent at this stage. He's drinking in the hospital, smoking in the hospital.
Mess.
And Max learns that Ms. Cross is now single again.
Right.
She and Herman are no longer together.
Mm-hmm.
And he helps bring Dr. Guggenheim out of a stroke somehow.
Yeah. Not my favorite scene.
Yeah, that you think that one was over the top?
It was not consistent with the rest of the humor, I think.
Totally different.
Yes.
I get you. I can see that. Mm-hmm. Can totally see that. So, Ms. Cross is single. Max wants to hook up with her still. One last chance. He does the old, I've just been hit by a car on my bike routine.
Yeah.
Which is understandable, and she might be concerned. But he comes to her house through the window.
I love it.
The second floor window.
Yeah, Miss Cross is maybe, perhaps not too bright.
There's a lot of weird things about that whole thing. He's got his great brown ski jacket on, which is a real rock star jacket.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes through the window with ketchup for fake blood.
Right.
She goes off to the bathroom, and he flips in the French song, the Yves Montand song.
Yeah.
So, and she hasn't even picked up on the fact that he's changed the music.
Yeah.
And
there's some pathos in that scene, though, right? Because that's her dead husband's sort of room.
Boyhood room. With all the toys around and stuff. And he says some really kind of almost mean-spirited things. Like, you're living in your dead husband's room.
Yeah. I mean, I guess he calls her on it,
yeah.
which is, I mean, it's true, but it is, a bit mean-spirited.
But they almost share kind of a half-kiss there, like, he goes to kiss her, and she doesn't, like, slap him or anything. I found that a bit
odd. Well, maybe again, I think she was a bit inappropriate.
So she calls Max out. He exits through that window again. I'll just go out through the window again.
Yeah.
So that's good stuff. And I think
she says at one point, too, I don't know, maybe it was not at this point, but she says to Max, you and Herman deserve each other. You're both little children.
That's true.
And I think that really summarizes why they have that affinity for each other, because they are sort of like both children.
I think that's the thing. Like, they're all, I thought they were like three lost souls, but those two guys are much more lost than she is. And if she's lost, she doesn't want to be found by them necessarily.
Right.
And it's funny, the choice of songs, it's this Yves Montand French song, and the red berets, and in Dr. Guggenheim's office, he's got a big picture of the Eiffel Tower. Like, there's so much French stuff going on.
Yeah,
I find it.
But that's what's so funny about Max as a character, right? I know, right? So, but he seems like he's so sort of educated and elitist, but then at other times he sort of is very small-minded. He doesn't have a lot of knowledge. What was it? The Latin American references? What was that?
She says, "I studied Latin American politics," and he said, oh, did you hear they're canceling Latin?
That's right,
She's like, I meant more Central America.
Right.
But the brilliance of Max is, when he's called out on his relative stupidity, he segues out of it nicely. Because what does he say there? He's like, after she corrects him, he's like, but moving on. Let's get back to what I want to talk to you about. There was something else he really screwed up. It'll come to me later. But So we've Max is out of school now. He's flying airplanes, but he meets Margaret Yang again, our good friend Margaret Yang from the public school. And I think he realizes they might be kindred spirits.
Definitely.
When she tells him she's cheated on her science fair.
Exactly. She faked the results.
She faked the results because they didn't work for her. Yeah. And he's kind of like, hey,
this lady, he had a lot of respect for that.
Get ahead. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Max, I think, decides he likes Margaret and he wants Bloom, Bill Murray's character, to end up with Miss Cross. Mm-hmm. And that's his new project, to work on that. And there's this great line where he's like, how much money do you have? Over $10 million? And he's like, yeah, good. We're going to need all of it. It's just great stuff.
Yeah. And then he was negotiating for the money, too. I mean, he said, I need like $35,000. And then Murray's like, well, I'll give you $2,500. That whole thing.
For sure.
Fine, good.
For sure.
Aim high, right?
So they, might as well ask for it. You might get it.
Yeah.
So they have a second attempt at an aquarium building, and Ms. Cross doesn't give a hoot.
No.
So we move into January, which I noted here is sort of a new year, new beginnings. Classic January stuff. Max is settling back in at his public school, and he puts on his big Vietnam opus play, which is so over the top. And I gotta think there's a Coppola
The whole Apocalypse Now. There's gotta be, right? Here, sure.
So that plays pretty intense when he's like, you've got safety goggles and earplugs under your seats.
Yeah.
So the play's just ridiculous.
But you see how much he's loved, right? Because they pan to the audience and sort of everyone he's touched, right? In attendance.
I like when they do this with movies, when everyone gathers at. You don't see that very often, where they're able to pull everyone back in. Everyone showed up. How did you end up here? How did you end up here? It's just brilliant stuff. So great play. Murray and Ms. Bloom sort of hook up again towards the end.
Right, because Max deliberately sat them beside each other, which is, again, a typical Max move, right?
Exactly. And even Max's dad might have found someone. And we end where everyone's dancing in super slow motion again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the end of the film. A couple things I wanted to talk to you about. First of all, Bill Murray.
Yeah.
He got rave reviews for this, understandably, I guess.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was nominated for a Golden Globe,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, but not the Oscar.
No. I don't know what was...
I don't know.
Well, do you typically nominate comedians for an Oscar?
Comedies are tough.
Right?
Comedies are tough, for sure. But what makes him work? I've always wondered what makes Bill Murray work.
It's just the way he delivers lines. It's his appearance.
Yep.
He seems like sort of an everyday Joe, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't have that sort of movie star striking appearance that would, sometimes can be distracting.
He can say almost anything and make it a funny line.
I know.
And line delivery aside, I noticed in this movie, there's a lot of weird things he's doing physically.
Yeah.
Like hiding behind trees.
Yeah.
When a conversation ends, he'll just sprint off.
Right.
He's hopping over fences for no reason.
Yeah.
That little kid's playing basketball, and he's trying to shoot the ball, and Bill Murray just stuffs him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He rings Miss Cross's doorbell and then runs back to the bottom step for no reason. Just weird things like that.
Those are sort of almost watching what a child would do, right? I mean,
that's
childlike behavior.
And like you were saying, if he was improvising a lot, I'm sure he came up with all that stuff.
Yeah.
For sure, it must be the childlike stuff. And I noticed a lot of things in here. Like, I was talking about the slow motion before and the montages. Anderson seems to use a lot of things here that I think work well. Like, there's a lot of scenes.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of really short scenes. Like, things keep moving.
Yeah, but it's not choppy, though, is it?
No, but I found it difficult to take notes because it's and the plot's maybe a bit confused in my head, the sequence of things.
Yeah, that's true.
Because it just moves boom, 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 boom. But it really works.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of real close-ups of people when they're talking.
Yeah.
Much more sort of TV.
And they're not particularly attractive people.
They're not attractive.
So that's sort of funny in itself too, right?
And the dialogue is very stilted and unnatural. Like there's a lot of sort of pseudo-philosophy.
Yeah.
So between those extreme close-ups and the dialogue, it almost feels like a European art film from the 60s or something.
Yeah.
Which made me wonder why all this, the French imagery and music was coming into, if he was really trying to say, I'm kind of making a Euro art film here. I don't know.
Yeah, that's
someone out there, I'm sure, knows a heck of a lot more about this than I do. And another thing I noticed a couple times is there are some scenes where you can't hear the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
When he's getting expelled from Rushmore.
Oh, yeah.
The door's closed.
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of hear Dr. Guggenheim going, Because Dirk Calloway's
outside
Dirk's,
the door. It's from Dirk's perspective.
Door's
though,
closed. You right? know what's going on. You see the tears going down in Max's face.
Oh,
but you
tragic.
Can't hear anything. You
yeah.
know?
That was
I think
really
there's
tragic.
At least one scene in the barbershop where you're looking inside the shop and you can't quite hear.
Yeah.
And there's a scene where Max is telling Herman's wife about his affair
oh,
on that rooftop.
Right.
And right when he goes to tell him, there's a siren going down the street. So you mm-hmm. can't actually hear what Max is saying. It's yeah. a really weird thing. I noticed he did a few times.
Yeah.
So I don't know. One other thing I want to talk to you about is the wonderful scene where Max's almost two dads meet. Bill Murray meets Seymour Cassell's character. Mm. I mean, this is a funny movie. It's really ridiculous. But that was a really touching moment.
Yeah, but it very understated, too.
Yeah.
It's yeah, well, nice no, to it, finally meet you kind of thing. I think
I know,
that's what Murray said.
Yeah,
but it was genuine,
you
right?
feel it. You really feel it because you just feel yeah. like Max was pretending his dad was a doctor.
Yeah.
But I think Murray loves the fact that he's a barber so much
oh,
more,
yeah.
you know.
It probably, like, you know, explains Max to him a bit.
Yeah.
Better.
So why don't we wrap up? We've been chatting about Rushmore for a while here. So what would you say the strongest point, the greatest strength of the movie is?
Well, Jason Schwartz, I mean, which we,
yeah.
I don't even think we've said that he's
yeah,
the one.
He's in the movie.
He's in the movie. He's Max. I would say he's the best thing about it. And you know, I've been trying to, we've sought him out in other movies and he has not done his Max again. I mean, we saw him in Marie Antoinette
yeah.
and I Heart Huckabee.
Yeah, that one didn't work.
Yeah,
for him.
I mean,
yeah,
there's
I
other
know.
Roles that he's taken that have been good, but that to me was yeah.
You know, like,
this is his
in Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. I thought he was the worst thing in the movie.
Yeah, I know.
So.
Anyway, he was fabulous in this role. So I mean, I think he and Bill Murray.
Yeah,
definitely, and their relationship. I mean,
yeah.
just brilliant.
For me, I think I would say the strongest thing is the score.
Mm-hmm.
And the soundtrack, just the use of music throughout,
yeah,
really it was incredible. Like I went out and bought the soundtrack. It's not something I normally do,
mm-hmm.
but the music just really sets the tone, I guess.
Yeah,
it's very whimsical.
And I had heard that they were originally going to do just the Kinks,
oh, just the Kinks,
just to represent sort of the
yeah.
angry male. But I don't know if that would have been good. I think that because there was
the mixture
variety.
Yeah.
Of angry songs.
Yeah, so it's a mixture of like angry British
invasion
songs for the most
yeah.
part, you know. But then the I don't have the guy's name here, Mark something. His score, a lot of like harpsichord, very whimsical kind of stuff. Very, very interesting. And that, to me, really set the tone.
Mm-hmm.
And I was listening to an interview recently conducted by the gentleman of the GGTMC. They were interviewing this director named Brian Trenchard-Smith, who's made a lot of action genre type movies. And he was saying the hardest thing to get in a movie is setting the tone.
Right.
Because you've got a script, you've got your set, you've got your actors, but you don't know what tone it's going to take until you get everything together for that first day. And this movie definitely has a tone.
Absolutely.
And, you know, they establish it early and they maintain it very, very,
mm-hmm.
very well. And I think the music has a huge part to do with that.
Yeah.
So that's my greatest strength. Achilles heel, anything you change? Any problems in there?
I think I said previously that scene with Brian Cox, the headmaster in the hospital,
yeah.
where he's in a coma, Max comes in, and all of a sudden he comes out of his coma, and you know, I think Brian Cox's wife says, you know, oh, he hasn't said anything for days, but you know, he...
And you're like, Fisher!
Yeah, it was just a little over the top,
it was,
I didn't like it, but...
It's
a little nit.
It is. No, I know what you mean. And for me, I think it's the second attempt to build the aquarium.
Okay.
They kind of had that
a bit redundant.
Thing, a bit redundant.
Yeah.
And she didn't show up for the big grand opening, but I was like, didn't we just have this scene earlier?
Mm-hmm.
And that to me was just one crazy idea too many, I guess.
Right.
Again, a little nitpick, but
yeah.
I could have excised that from it.
Yeah.
So overall, I guess you like Rushmore?
Oh, yeah, I guess a little bit. yeah.
So like a C, C+.
That's right.
Maybe B-.
Yeah.
Would you give this movie a higher grade than Max would get on in any of his courses?
Yeah, fair. Yes, indeed.
It seemed like he was pretty happy with a C-.
Is it C+ or C-, yeah.
So what do you think you give grade for Rushmore?
I'm going to give it an A. Solid A.
A.
Yeah.
I'll do the same.
All right.
Yeah. Max, you got two A's for the first time in your life here, buddy. Okay, so there's our very harsh critique of Rushmore.
Yeah.
Do not see this movie. It's terrible. Big waste of your time. You've probably all seen Rushmore. You maybe hate it. You maybe don't. But I should say, I was worried because I loved this movie the first time I saw it. Mm. And you loved it the first time you saw it. It's one of the first DVDs we ever bought.
That's right.
Like, we have the bare bone, nothing else. Like, it's got, you know, the theatrical trailer included. Wow. It's a very bare bone. I was worried this time watching it with a really critical eye, it may not work for me.
It held up.
Because I was really trying to pick it apart, and I couldn't.
No.
And, people love the Royal Tenenbaums. I love it, too. But I still think this is Wes Anderson's best movie that I've seen.
Yep. Flawless.
Flawless. Well said, flawless. With that note, we'll take a break and be back with just a tidbit of feedback. Stay tuned. Got some feedback this evening. You know what? There's one thing I wanted to cover. I don't think we were clear before, but just wanted to reiterate that we actually, we might have sent a mixed message. We both do like Rushmore.
Yeah.
Just in case.
Just in case there was any confusion.
Any confusion.
Good thing you clarified, Scott.
Yeah, it is two thumbs up. So first up, we have Emily sent us a voicemail, so let's give a listen.
Hello, Pat and Scott. It's Emily again. Just listened to the Richard III episode, and I really enjoyed it. It's a movie that kept escaping me. I remember when it came out, I think it was either Ebert or Siskel's biggest pick of the year, and I just never got around to it. And what's embarrassing is I realized I was an English major in college and everything, and I never actually read Richard III, except for the one scene that you both referenced, the seduction of Anne, which... I studied playwriting in college, and my professor always, every year, made his class read that scene because he felt it was the epitome of just a great turning point scene and how, just the ability of Richard to be able to transform Anne at that moment and all the whole, he always references the whole fight or fuck, how every single thing you ever see on stage is about one of the two things, and that one's about both. And also other modern Shakespearean adaptations, a few others I will throw out there. Really curious if you guys had seen Titus and what you thought of it. It's what I love about it is it makes a really visually striking, very funny and gory horror movie out of what many people call Shakespeare's worst play, but I think it's kind of one of his best comedies if you look at it that way. Yes, I was a nerd. And the other one, Scotland, PA, which was from a few years back, which was Macbeth in small-town Pennsylvania fast food industry, which I find very amusing. It changes the language, but the story is completely there, and I think it works well. And Switchblade Sisters, which is pretty much Othello, as Quentin Tarantino points out in one of the special features on that DVD. Okay, that's all. Keep up the good work. Bye.
Okay, thanks, Emily. So Emily suggests Titus.
Titus. Huh.
We tried Titus.
We did. Too artsy for us? I don't know. I love the play. It's a nice, gruesome play. It's great. It's not usually on a usual course syllabus, but it is an interesting one.
Yeah, several years ago we rented it and really gave it a go, but maybe, I don't know, maybe I might have been in a bad mood or something. It does from time to time.
That you get in a bad mood?
Like on occasion.
Very moody
Twice
fellow.
A year, maybe. I don't know. It just didn't work, and I don't know why. Everything should have clicked for it.
Well, let's revisit it.
We should try it again. Mm-hmm. So Emily mentioned a few other Shakespeare-type films. That one, Scotland, PA, sounds interesting. And yeah, there are a lot of good other adaptations of Shakespeare.
Yeah, Strange Brews based on Hamlet.
Strange Brew, that's good. The Canadian Hamlet, for sure. The Elsinore Brewery. Slightly dumber, of course, is Kurosawa's Ran, which is based on King Lear, with three sons rather than three daughters. And there's that book, Jane something. It's called 1,000 Acres, and it's like a Midwestern movie with three daughters. I think it's another King Lear one. Okay. So that's great. We should really try Titus again. So that's it for voicemails. We have a couple of emails here. I'm going to smoothly transition to opening these up, and while I'm doing that, I actually want you to email us, because I never mentioned this before, and probably a key to good podcasting getting feedback is mentioning your email address.
That's true.
Or phone number.
And mention it correctly.
Correctly. I can. I've done neither tonight so far. So send us email at marriedwithclickers@gmail.com or phone us at 206-338-7983 and from the UK, 001-206-338-7983. Of course, those numbers are on our Podomatic page and soon to be Libsyn page. Okay, so our first email, both are from the South this evening.
Great.
So the first is from Mississippi, Jed in Mississippi. He says he's listened to episode 4 and enjoyed it. He says we've got nice voices and good senses of humor.
Thank you.
And that we do seem to be happily married. Correct him if he's wrong, he says.
Do you need to correct him? Most days, yeah, no, today I would agree.
I was kind of hot and cold a bit today. Yeah. No, I mean, not from you. As a husband, I ran hot and cold. I had some peaks and valleys today. Oh, you're panicking,
backtracking rapidly. We are about to celebrate our 10th year anniversary. Well, in the fall.
So. In the fall, but trying to plan some sort of trip. And the hardest part of planning a trip, of course, is getting someone to commit to babysitting.
Yeah.
Because we want to go child-free.
Jed was just being polite. More than you wanted to know, Jed.
Way more. So he liked the fact that I talked about watching action movies while you were away with your lady friends. He says Code of Silence, which he says is like Serpico if Serpico had some balls and a damn remote control tank. Now, in Code of Silence, you still haven't seen it yet.
No,
but
I haven't.
The Chicago Police Department has this really 80s RoboCop. It's like, it almost looks like a vacuum cleaner that shoots cannons and stuff like that. It's like a CopBot 2000. Sounds pretty lame.
Brilliant.
So, he suggests that since you've never seen a Chuck Norris film, we should actually review something that's hardcore action. And he's suggesting John Woo's The Killer. From the late 80s, I think.
I would be amenable to that.
That would be a pretty good one to see. I've never seen The Killer. I actually don't know much John Woo's Hong Kong pre-American stuff very well.
Okay.
All well regarded, I think. So he says we should do it for two reasons. Oh, dinner's ready. First, it would allow us to explore the idea of whether films with non-stop action can make for legitimate storytelling and art. And second, we listeners, them, can hear how our opinions might differ on the film.
Okay, that sounds good.
That
I'm
sounds good.
To do that.
Oh, we may still agree on that one, though.
Yeah, I know. That's true.
Who knows? Who knows? Okay, next up, it's my good friend Dan. Dan from Alabama. Now, Dan is one of my comic book pals from Comic Book Resources. If you're a big comic book nerd, come over there to the Classic Comics Forum. It's just a great bunch of guys. So Dan is from Alabama, and he doesn't have a great internet connection.
Oh, no.
I know he's a bit, he's still on a phone line, I guess. And he says in his email, he hasn't had a chance to listen to our show because he's trying to switch to DSL, and he's in mid-switch.
We're not judging. We're not too
It's our first listener
here.
That's yet to listen.
Yeah.
Which I think is pretty cool. Yeah. It's like we're in some sort of crazy science fiction time vortex. But he wanted to say, he knew we were talking about Best Worst Movie. And he wanted to say he wants to listen to that one to hear mine and your comments on Best Worst Movie. And he said his local art house screened it a couple of months ago. And the stars of Troll 2, the main star, the dentist, showed up.
Ah.
Because he doesn't live too far away from there. I think Dan's in Montgomery, Alabama, if memory serves. There's a guy, I don't know if he was from Alabama or Mississippi.
I'm not sure, I can't remember. But he did show up to a lot of the screenings.
He did show up. And Dan says there was a Q&A and it was quite fun. That would have been awesome.
Yeah, he's very enthusiastic, that dentist.
Very enthusiastic. So that's it for tonight's feedback. So please send us an email or voicemail. Now, next week, what are we covering?
The Monkey Movie.
The Monkey Movie. Now, Kat, being the darling wife that she is, said she's up for a monkey movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, with that, I've
chosen... And not the cute monkeys that make me scream, ah!
We're not covering Curious George.
No. I was actually thinking about the monkeys, the musicians.
Oh, the monkeys. Oh, Head would be a good one to cover someday,
yeah,
though.
I know.
What if Head's on... You know, Head just came out on Blu-ray. We should get it.
Okay.
Oh, I love Head. That sounded terrible.
So do I.
I love the monkey's Head. Yeah. Anywho, what am I talking about then?
Next week.
Next week, Escape from the Planet of the Apes will be the film. And for those of Y&R fans out there, Eric Braeden has a major role in this one, Victor Newman.
I like Y&R, but I don't like mustaches. Sorry to offend any of you men out there. Or women with mustaches.
Now we're really going downhill. I don't know if he has a mustache in this one. When he was young, he didn't always have a mustache in films. He might have one in here, but I can't really remember. He plays an evil scientist. You don't have to worry about him putting on an ape suit.
Okay, good.
Dr. Heslein. So that's it. Next week, Escape from the Planet of the Apes. We're going to get the dust off our VHS copy of it. When I say ours, I mean mine.
Yes.
And that's part of matrimonial property.
Right.
You get some of the good and some of the bad. Okay, so please join us next week for Escape from the Planet of the Apes. And we shall talk to you soon. Bonsoir.
Good night.
Lift with the legs, Hercules. The trap you